It is now time for our featured segment. It is called Mic Check. It is Black History Month, Anthony Turner. And ladies and gentlemen, we are going to be taking a look at some of the issues affecting African-American, yes, black folks in these United States, and it probably will stretch around the world. What is the way forward? In light of the current economic, political, and social environment, Anthony, we're going to go into Temple University, and we are going to find adjunct professor and attorney at law, Mr. Michael Cord. He is our guest this morning. Please introduce the guest, Anthony.
Well, as you said, for Black History Month, we are going to present a firebrand defense attorney. He has more than 25 years of state and a federal trial experience, and he specializes in a murder case. What are we talking about, Mr. Michael Cord? And while in law school at Ohio State University, as president of the Black Law Students Association, he actually led the activism that compelled the university to divest all its funds from companies doing business with South Africa. As an attorney, he has successfully litigated at trial a historic private criminal complaint that sought a murder prosecution of a white police officer who had killed an unarmed black teen. As a community activist, he is a founding member of the Avenging the Ancestor Coalition, ATAC, an organization that helped lead the historic and successful battle to force the federal government to agree to commemorate the African descendants enslaved by President George Washington at America's very first White House, which was located at the current site of the new Liberty Bell Center. He served as Pennsylvania board member of the ACLU and the Philadelphia chapter of the National Lawyers Guild, as well as being a member of the Occupy Philadelphia legal defense team. So we welcome attorney Michael Cord to Grooving Radio this Saturday morning.
Good morning, counsel. How are you?
I'm doing well, gentlemen. How's everybody doing today?
Well, I'm doing fine. Anthony, how you doing?
Yeah, man, everything is great, man. Great to have a star like you in this Black History Month presentation.
Indeed. Yeah. And you know, counsel, when you look back at what we're celebrating this month, Black History Month, it started out as a week. It got extended to a month, and we must take it very, very seriously. And that's where I want to start. As we celebrate Black History Month, Attorney Cord, how should we celebrate it? How?
Great question to start things off. And by the way, thank you very much for having me on your popular show. I really appreciate that. I love how you started it, because you obviously know the history. And the history is that when the great Dr. Carter G. Woodson, known as the father of black history, when he envisioned it, it was 1925. Mm-hmm. And he finally implemented it a year later, 1926, and he called it Negro History Week. Mm-hmm. That's in 1926. Then fast forward to 1972, it was changed to Negro History Month. Mm-hmm. And then 4 years later, in 1976, it became Black History Month. But here's the thing. When the great Dr. Carter G. Woodson envisioned it in 1925, he said he never, quote, never intended it to be just a day, mm-hmm, or just a week or just a month. He said his idea was a springboard to black history, African history, being infused into world history. Mm-hmm. Because you can't discuss world history, whether it's European history, whether it's American history, without considering and factoring in the great contributions of Africans from the very beginning.
Indeed.
So yes, we're celebrating it this month, but as you pointed out in the beginning, it's much, much bigger than that. Now, having said that, what we have to do today, mm-hmm, as black folks in diaspora, we got to, quote, know thyself. All the problems we have, all the ills we have, I'm not going to say are self-inflicted. Mm-hmm. I'm saying that although Europeans are responsible for the hell that we were thrown into, we have the capacity to get ourselves out of it. But we got to know ourselves. And the way we know ourselves is forced by what Dr. Joy DeGruy talked about. We got to understand that there's a need to heal ourselves. when you see what black people are doing to other black people, many people mistakenly call that. And by the way, I'll take a breath in 10 seconds and, you know, have you all chime in. But I wanted to say this before I wrap this point up. Mm-hmm. When we look at what black folks tend to do to each other in Philadelphia, mm-hmm. in Pennsylvania, in America, in the motherland, worldwide, people often call that black on black crime. Mm-hmm. But it's not black on black crime. We all know the story of Frankenstein, but many people think that the monster that was causing the death and destruction, they think that monster was named Frankenstein. Mm-hmm. That monster was not named Frankenstein. People say, well, who's the hell Frankenstein? Frankenstein was Dr. Victor Frankenstein, who created the monster. Mm-hmm. So anytime you see black folks doing negative things toward each other, one, they don't know themselves. Mm-hmm. Two, they must heal themselves. And three, they do it by understanding that the root cause of the problem is not black people. The root cause of the problem is so-called white supremacy.
Indeed, indeed. And it's real, ladies and gentlemen. And if you just take a good look at what's happening today, what has happened to this country over the last, let's say, 6 years, if you look back on the last administration and how it dealt with democracy in this country, you would know how real white supremacy is. Our special guest this morning is adjunct professor and attorney at law, Mr. Michael Cord. At this current juncture, counsel, at this current juncture in our history in these United States, what can we as black people celebrate in terms of our progress, whether it's economical, political, or even socially? What are, in your perspective, give me the top three milestone of black people over the last 5 years, in your perspective.
Excellent question. What we have to do is start from the beginning. And if we start from the beginning, like I said at the outset of this conversation, in terms of knowing thyself, if we understand that where we came from, we could excel far beyond where we are. Because if you look at the problems we're having now, three off the top of my head, we deal with the issue of lack of education. We deal with the issue of unemployment. We deal with the issue of poverty. And that's not just in the last 5 years. That's pretty much been since 1619. But if we understand a couple things, one, and I always have to start from the beginning. And what I always make sure I never do, when I talk about black history-related topics, I don't start with 1619. I don't start with slavery, because the history of black people is much bigger than slavery. Mm-hmm. You know, if we look at the existence of humans on this planet as a clock, then that period of enslavement in America, at least from 1619 to 1865, that might be about 10 or 15 minutes out of that 24-hour clock. People say, well, what went on before then? Mm-hmm. Well, the beginning is 300,000 years ago. That's when black folks were the first human beings on this planet from the Nile Valley region of East Africa. If that's where the clock starts, and it does, and how do we know that? Because great scholars like the great Dr. Molefe Asante of Temple University, he taught us that. And we know that for about 225,000 years of mm-hmm. those 300,000 years, it was just Africans doing their thing. And what I mean by that is we were inventing agriculture and algebra and architecture and astronomy and calculus, even the calendar, the use of cotton, medicine, religion, writing. So if we know all that's about what we did in Africa and what we did alone for at least 225,000 years of those 300,000, mm-hmm. and no disrespect to any other ethnic group, but the great human migration theory teaches us that the first human was black, had hair like yours and mine, had skin like yours and mine. And then folks begin to trek northward out of the motherland. And because the environment changed and the climate changed, then there was no need for the melanin that provides the beautiful black skin. There was no need for the strong hair that protects you from the sun's ultraviolet rays. So other people came into existence. But my point is this: if we know what we did from the beginning, mm-hmm. fast forward to America, even despite slavery. We know that we invented the air conditioner, the dry cleaning process, the modern day elevator, the home heating system, the light bulb, the modern light bulb, the refrigeration system for frozen food, the remote control that we use every day for TV, the blueprint for the telephone. We're taught that Alexander Graham Bell did it, but no, Lewis Latimer, a black man, prepared the blueprint for that, the traffic signal that you... So if we know all those things, those three problems I laid out to you, and you said, well, what's been going on for the last 5 years, the problems of lack of education and unemployment and poverty, each one of those problems would be resolved. And very quickly, even when we talk about poverty, yes, black folks don't have as much per capita as white folks do, but studies show that black people have a buying power, spending power of over $1 trillion. So if we were able to get our minds right and put our heads together and do what we need to do to advance economically as a group, we'd be in a much better situation. And very quickly, there's no need to even reinvent the wheel. If people knew our history, they would know about Black Wall Street in Tulsa, Oklahoma, where black folks came together and they had all types of businesses you couldn't imagine. What happened? White folks burned it down. So I don't want anybody, especially black folks, to think that we don't have anything because we're lazy. We don't have as much as we should have because of so-called white supremacy. And the reason why I say so-called white supremacy is because white folks didn't get to the top of the economic ladder by being supreme. No disrespect, but they got to the top of the economic ladder by being more savage. And what I mean by that is this. We know Africans did horrible stuff to Africans. We know Asians did horrible stuff to Asians. We know Europeans did horrible stuff to Europeans. People tend to victimize their neighbors, and that's part of human nature tragedy. But there's only one group, among those groups I laid out that everywhere they went outside of their homeland, everywhere they went, they raped, they robbed, and they pillaged. So that wasn't white supremacy. It was white savagery.
Oh, a special guest this morning, ladies and gentlemen, Black History Presentation, adjunct professor and attorney at law, Mr. Michael Cord. And you know, Attorney Cord, when we look on the clothes dryer, we look on the curtain rod, we look on the door stopper, we look at the egg beater. You mentioned the electric bulb. Anthony, we look at elevator, eye protector. You look at the fire escape ladder, fire extinguisher. The list goes on. Fountain pen, gas mask. You look at all of that, Anthony. And you said, if you take away black invention, black invention from this society, what would it look like? And you know, I have a question regarding us, and it's coming out of colonization and what colonization has done to us. But Anthony, I know you have a question, so let me give you this opportunity to ask, and then I come back. Go ahead.
Yes. Good morning, Attorney. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing well, sir. Good hearing from you.
All right. I'm listening to the conversation, and I'm just thinking about our children and that they've been taught about Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., who we know advocated for peace and equality. Many of them have heard about Rosa Parks, the civil rights activist whose refusal to give up on the bus to a white passenger ignited the Montgomery bus boycott. So I'm saying, Attorney, in light of some of these struggles that we've faced in recent years as black people living in America, the murder of our black youths in America, how do you suggest we prepare and teach our young kids about our history so they must know their history so they can move forward in a racially divided America?
You pose a profound question, a great question. Here's the answer. We often think every generation, every past, every prior generation always thinks that the current generation is out of control. You know, my parents thought that my generation was out of control. Their parents thought that they were out of control. I mean, we look back in the 60s and 70s, the hippies and all that. Those folks who were doing all that crazy stuff in the 60s and 70s, they're 70, 80, 90 years old. And they look at the current generation and say that they're out of control. So it's really interesting. Every generation, every previous generation thinks that the current generation is out of control. So that takes me to your question. We look at the widespread crime and death and destruction taking place amongst the current young generation. I'm talking about people from age, let's say, 15 to 20, 15 to 25. And we look at them and say, they're the worst ever. This is the worst it's ever been in human existence. Mm-hmm. Well, that's kind of true, but there's a reason for that. And the reason is technology. Reason is the cell phone. Reason is the internet. Mm-hmm. There are things today that a 15-year-old has immediate access to that would have been unheard of, yes, 25 years ago for a 15-year-old. So if you take that person who was 15 years old in 1975 and bring them to 2025 at age 15, they're going to have different exposure to different things. We all know that kids tend to be impulsive. We hang around with our little group. Somebody in the group says something crazy. We all jump on it, and then we do the thing. We go and steal the car. We go and shoplift. Stuff like that amongst our little group. But now it's bigger than that. It's not just our little crew of 3, 4, 5 guys in the neighborhood. Now it's millions on the internet.
Indeed.
So the craziest thing that you're exposed to on the internet now, I'm not just talking about violent crime. I'm talking about sexual stuff, perverted stuff. Now you're exposed to that. So I don't want people to think that today's young generation is worse than my generation when I was young. It's just that this generation has access to much more negativity than we had 15, 20, 25 years ago. So here's the answer directly to your question. I'll wrap this up in 30 seconds. Anytime, if you want to go to France in order to enlighten French people about something, you'll speak French.
Indeed.
If you want to go to Spain and enlighten Spanish people about something, you'll speak Spanish. If you want to go to China and enlighten Chinese people about something, you'll speak Chinese. So now, in order for us to enlighten the youth, we got to speak their language. And how do we speak their language? Right now, the language of young people is clearly hip-hop. It's no doubt about it.
Mm-hmm.
So the only people right now who young folks really listen to are some of the hip-hop stars.
Mm.
So it's incumbent upon us to latch on to the 2 or 3 or 4 that might have some consciousness. Because if I tell them, hey, go to school, if I tell them, marry a girlfriend and be a good father, if I tell them, go get a job, that's going to sound corny and silly to them. They don't want to hear that from some old guy. But if a popular rapper said it in a way that they can feel it, then we're better. So the answer to your question is, we got to find out those young people who are popular in social media. They call them influencers.
Indeed.
And we got to reach out to them. One of the things we need to do is generate a fund where if we can get our own black hip-hop record label, and we pay these guys a whole bunch of money, these young men a whole bunch of money, but it's got to be positive rap.
Indeed.
If we could pay them on record labels and give them a bunch of money to talk about positive stuff, it would change. So the short answer to your question is, we got to speak their language. How do we speak their language? By pulling out the 2, 3, 4, 5, 10 of them, or whatever the number is, and getting them to spread the word. But there has to be an attraction. And sadly, the attraction is almost always money, unfortunately.
Wow. And you know, earlier on, counsel, you said know your past and know where you're coming from. We have to know our history. And this leads me now, Anthony, to the question you asked about, you mentioned Rosa Parks, and our history is so distorted. Rosa Parks wasn't really the one who was the first woman to ever sat in a bus and refuse to give up her seat. Claudette Colvin is still alive.
Yes.
She was arrested before Rosa Parks, and her record just got cleared a few years ago. So all these years that we kept mentioning Rosa Parks, we never mentioned Claudette Colvin. And she was the great, she was the pioneer of all of this bus movement down there in Alabama. So talk about knowing our history. So folks, this Black History Month, we're going to celebrate it in a way where we're going to get to know our history in a more intimate way. And that's why.
I'm so glad
indeed
you mentioned Claudette Colvin, because we need to know that story.
Mm-hmm.
We also need to know everything around it, because even though, first of all, Claudette Colvin is disrespected in Black history. Mm-hmm. Because unlike you, people never even mention her name. But once we mention her name, we got to make sure that we understand why, for example, the NAACP decided to run with Rosa Parks instead of Claudette Colvin. And the answer was strategic. The reason they did it, and we can agree or disagree on this as reasonable people in America today, but Claudette was young, unmarried, and did poorly in school, and was pregnant. So she was 15, 16 years old, poor student, pregnant. Here comes Rosa Parks, who's the secretary for the NAACP. Good job, quote unquote, good background. So they thought in terms of the media, let's put Rosa Parks out there because she's quote unquote pristine. If we put Claudette Colvin out there, then the racists are going to bash us for having somebody like that. Now, when I say somebody like that, that's no disrespect to Sister Claudette. I mean, people do what they have to do. So my point is, we should give Rosa Parks credit and the NAACP credit for pushing it in a strategic way. Well, we also got to give Sister Claudette the benefit of the doubt and the praise for lighting the match to start the fire. If it wasn't for her, there would be no Rosa Parks. So they both deserve credit, but nobody besides you and folks like us will mention Claudette.
Attorney, here is where we're going to wrap this first segment. History teaches us that racism is not only individual, but it's also institutional. It is institutional. It has been built into the foundation of the United States, from the early days of colonization, from slavery, from Jim Crow. The discrimination that we have faced, counsel, the oppression that we have been put under. How do we break ourselves up, some of us, as broken out of it? But how do we get to the others? How do we get to the others to walk them out of this? Because it seems as if we're going to have to walk them out. How do we do that, counsel?
The answer is a one that I came up with over the last 10, 15 years of being so frustrated that Black folks have never come together as a major united front and walk in lockstep toward addressing the issues you just raised in the question you posed. So here's my answer, my short answer to you. You don't go to war with the army you want. You go to war with the army you have. So what I'm saying is that you're part of this army. I'm part of this army. All of us here are part of this army. We just got to push forward. And sadly, we're not going to save all Black people. We might not even save most Black people. Most Black people didn't want to hear, many Black people didn't want to hear from Dr. King. And even more didn't want to hear from Malcolm X. And only a few would listen to what Nat Turner was talking about. So because we've been divided by class, rich Blacks, poor Blacks, because we've been divided by religion, Muslim Blacks, Christian Blacks, because we've been divided by education, blue-collar Blacks and white-collar Blacks, we got so much going on that divides us. So my point is, I wish we can bring all those groups together as one strong army, but as I said at the outset, you don't go to war with the army you want, you go to war with the army you have. We, Anthony and Roz and myself and others, we're part of that army. We just got to move forward and bring in as many soldiers as we can, and those who join us, great. Those who don't, Unfortunate.
Counsel, we're going to take a break in 2 minutes, and I'm going to give you, it's a 3-minute break, and I'm going to give you something to think about. And when we come back, that's where we're going to start. The system that oppressed us, the system that enslaved us, it is the same system today that is operating the banking system, the penal system, the criminal justice system, the education system, healthcare, housing, policing. It is the same system that is operating all, honing and operating all these system that I just mentioned. The challenges that we face today in all of these systems, penal system, criminal justice system, education system, the banking system. We have been under pressure in all of these for years. When we come back, we're going to talk about how we should come together. What is the path forward? How should we break away and create our own? Attorney at law, Michael Cord, is our special guest this morning. It's a Black History presentation. Anthony Turner, our writer, is also a part of the conversation.
It's powerful, it's informative, it's educational with lots of thought-provoking conversations. Yes, it's Groovin' Radio, Saturday morning 9 to 11:30 and Sunday evening 6 to 8, right here on 93.5 WVIP, hosted by Ross Klemm. Join the Groovin' Radio experience and stay one step ahead.
East, and this is the Original Chronics representing, and I say, you're listening to Groovin' Radio with the original Ross Klemm on 93.5 WVIP FM. Keep it grooving, and we will keep it moving all the time, every time. Ease out.
And thank you so much, Chronics, for bringing us up for the final 26 minutes of our Groovin' Radio's presentation this Saturday morning. We are in our featured segment. It is called Mic Check, celebrating Black History Month. And we are celebrating with noted attorney and adjunct professor out of the city of brotherly love, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, attorney at law, Mr. Michael Cord. He is our very special guest. Anthony Turner is also a part of the conversation. Gentlemen, welcome back. Welcome back.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you.
Counsel, before we took the break, I gave you a couple of systems that has been operated by the Jim Crow system, the banking system, the penal system, the criminal justice system, the educational system, healthcare, the policing, even our food policies. How can we as a people, counsel, Black people, who have been persecuted for all these years, what kind of trust should we have in these systems?
We should have absolutely no trust in the system. And that's based on the beginning. And the beginning is 1492, when the Europeans first encountered people of color. From that very day, it's been all downhill. The brown people and the red people trusted Columbus. The black folks in the 1600s in West Africa trusted the Europeans who approached them in those gigantic floating boats known as ships. So for whatever reason, and we can discuss this more extensively in another show, but for whatever reason, people of color, certainly black people, tended to assume that everybody was like them. So if you meet a stranger, you welcome the stranger. But the European had a whole different approach. So again, we learned from 1492, from Columbus. We learned from 1619 here in the Virginia colony in what became the United States, that trusting people like that was a mistake. And you talked about the penal system. You talked about the educational system, the banking systems. All those come down to what we call so-called white supremacy. Again, I think a better term, white savagery. And this all comes from, and I'll spend just 30 seconds on this, critical race theory. And many people don't understand what critical race theory is. They think critical race theory is black history. It is not. They think critical race theory is African-American history, quote-unquote slave history. It is not. Critical race theory is something that was conceived in law schools, and it was initially called critical legal studies. And it was an ingenious approach to race. Here's what it said. It said, when you look at the penal system, the educational system, the banking system, all those systems, and then you see what's going on, and you say, wow, why are there more black people in jail than there should be? Why are there more black people who are illiterate? Why are there more black people who are poor? What's going on here? And if you call that community, if you call that society, if you call that city, that state, that national government, if you call it racist, people can pick it apart and say, well, it's really not racist because, for example, you had a black president, or in some states you had a black governor, or you had a black mayor, or they say stuff like, hey, it was five black cops who beat and killed that black man. So it's not really about race, many people would argue. But here's the answer from critical race theory. Critical race theory says you determine whether a society is racist, not just on what it does, but how it was established. And any society is established based on its laws, because that's when the leaders of that community who are elected by that community create certain rules, and we call those rules laws. So from as early as 1619, you have what they call the slave codes. Mm-hmm. Even here in the United States, 1776, you got 56 white male property owners signing the Declaration of Independence, 41 of those 56 enslaving our ancestors. The U.S. Constitution has written in it, beginning in 1789, that black people were three-fifths of a human being, that black people who escaped slavery had to be brought back, that the importation of Africans to America will continue for another 20 years. All this stuff is based on the laws of this society. Mm-hmm. So critical race theory says that you look at the laws to determine whether or not a society is racist, and America's laws prove that. What we have to do is have more programs like yours. You can hear from people like you, Brother Ross. Got to hear from people like Anthony. By the way, big shout out to Stan Slaughter, and also big shout out to Dr. Karen Duncan. I want to, so it's people like us that got to come together and continue to do what you're doing. Because there are people listening to this show now that you have no idea about, but they heard the three of us drop those jewels, they're going to pass on to other people. So the more we do what we're doing, that's the answer. That's the solution.
Indeed. You know, you mentioned slave code. They have the slave code, Anthony, but they also have the slave Bible. Think about that. They have the slave code and they have the slave Bible. You know, I'm going to drop one more and I'm going to leave the rest to you, Anthony, this morning. One of our biggest issues, some of our biggest issues today, Council, is income disparities, wealth disparities, health disparities. I mean, where did we lose it? Because the continent is probably the continent of Africa is probably the richest continent in the world that has all the resources to feed and cure its people. I mean, how did we fall into this? Where did we lose it? The disparities that we are facing today, wealth, income, health, I mean, how did we lose it?
Now, I'm prepared to answer. I didn't know if Brother Anthony wanted to respond to this.
Go ahead, Council. Go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, here's my answer, and I really mean no disrespect to those of our black brothers and sisters who are Christian, but it was Christianity that kind of weakened us to the point where we began to believe that it doesn't matter how you treat us during our earthly existence, because we're going to heaven for all eternity. And we not only begin to believe that, we begin to proselytize that. Now, again, I'm not saying that all black Christians are ignorant. I'm just saying that many of us from the very beginning, when the white man came with his Bible to Africa, we fell for that. But they are great black Christians. Dr. King was a strong black Christian. And my favorite black Christian of all time was Nat Turner. People didn't realize that he was a Christian. They called him the prophet, and he did what he did to destroy evil. And going back to your point about the slave Bible, that is so true. They actually made sure they highlighted the points that talked about, quote, slave, obey your master, and we fell for that. So the answer is we need to understand where we came from in order to move ahead. And the final thing I'll say is this. There are a lot of black folks in America, on the motherland, throughout the diaspora, who are extraordinarily wealthy. But the problem is that too many of us have sold our soul to capitalism. I mean, Africa was a socialistic society. I'm not saying necessarily like Marxism. I'm simply saying that what you had didn't belong to you. It belonged to the community. So you can't have 10 cows or 10 heads of cattle and your neighbor starving. My point, it was all about coming together. Then the European came along, began to build fences, even divided up the motherland, and we began to fall for that. So if we stop taking on the negative ideology of the European, capitalism and socialism, and begin to embrace the community approach, the socialistic approach of our ancestors, we'd be in a much better position.
Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Grooving Radio. You are building knowledge here, and folks, it is cholesterol free. And the fact that we mention the slave Bible, I'm going to drop this piece that NBC did. I have to give NBC credit for this one.
Inside Washington's Museum of the Bible, a single volume that is like no other. The so-called Slave Bible. Remarkable not for what's in it, but for what's not.
So about 90% of the Old Testament's been removed and about 50% of the New Testament's been removed. To put it another way, a normal King James Version has 1,189 chapters in it. The Slave Bible has only 232.
Missing are chapters and verses that might have encouraged uprisings. Book of Exodus, redacted. No story of Moses demanding Pharaoh, "Let my people go." Gone is Galatians, and the verse, "There is neither bond nor free, for ye are all one in Christ Jesus." And no Jeremiah, "Woe unto him that useth his neighbor's service without wages."
What they've left in are verses such as Ephesians 6:5, which is the famous verse, "Slaves, be obedient to your master."
Mm. Looking at this Bible, it's hard to tell that anything's been taken out of it.
That's correct. I mean, it looks like a normal book. For many enslaved Africans, this would have been the first time they were exposed to the Bible.
A Bible selectively edited to instill obedience, using religion to underpin the horror of slavery.
When people encounter this exhibit, what lasting impression do you want them to leave with?
Well, we want to pass the message on that may this never happen again. The Bible itself is a whole book. It's not one that you get to carve up and use this piece or that piece.
The Slave Bible designed to repress rebellion, but it didn't work. Enslaved people in the Caribbean constantly fought against slavery until emancipation.
I think it's very relevant to understand our history, mm-hmm. not just American history, but mm-hmm. our African-American mm-hmm. history, our roots and how we got to this point.
Mm. A dark chapter in the history of the good book.
There you have it, ladies and gentlemen. So when we mention the Slave Bible, it is real. It is real, folks. Anthony, you have a question to wrap.
Yes, Yeah, counsel, as I am here sitting and listening, boy, you are giving us really a good history. And I'm thinking about this great country that we call America that was established upon the profound but simple idea that all people are created equal and should be treated equally throughout our lives. What is your forecast for this country as blacks that we call America, achieving the objective of equality of all races going forward?
Great question. Here's the short answer. There are many white races, predominantly white Republicans, calling themselves MAGAs or calling themselves the Proud Boys and all that kind of stuff. And they are really against what they call the Great Replacement Theory. And in their mind, the great Replacement Theory in America is the browning and blackening of America. In other words, as a quote-unquote race, because we know that race is not really a biological concept. It's socially constructed. But for our purposes, we'll continue to use the term. So if we look at the white race, numerically, they're beginning to diminish because there are more brown people being born in America, more black people being born in America. So based on the sheer numbers, the blatant racism of America today is diminishing, not because America's people, not because America's white people are becoming better, it's because it's going to be less of them. Mm. So if you ask me, how do I see the future? I say the future looks bright, because it's going to be blacker and browner because, and this is a whole other discussion we can have, genetics, the genes of black people and of brown people are much stronger. That's a whole different topic. So the short answer, the future looks bright because it's going to be browner and blacker.
Indeed. And you just opened a new can of worm, attorney Cord, because once you put it out there telling them that the future is going to look a little bit browner and a little bit darker, you've put us in a different light. So this is my... This is where I am going to end, and I'm going to give you 3 minutes to answer this one. You know, oftentimes, our black history is riddled with struggles and sadness. Now, where can we as a people find moments of joy as we continue to navigate this, our difficult existence in these United States? That is my final question.
And the answer is this. First of all, we have to put ourselves in a situation where we can get better. And what do I mean by that? We got to listen to shows like this. Mm-hmm. We got to go to lectures by people like Dr. Molefe Asante. We got to Google great African-centered scholars and intellectuals. People like Dr. Marimba Adni, who wrote a powerful book called Urugu. And Urugu pretty much explains the whole notion of why white people have done what they've done since they took their first steps on this planet. We have to look at people like Michael Bradley. Michael Bradley is a white scholar who wrote a book called The Iceman Inheritance. And he, as a white man, admits that for the most part, Europeans, Caucasians have been destructive, and he explains it from a genetic standpoint. And I want to make clear, this is a white guy who's saying that. Then we've got people like Dr. Jacob Carruthers and Sheikh Anta Diop and Dr. Aisha Hilliard. We certainly have Dr. Ben. We got, and J.A. Rogers. J.A. Rogers wrote so much great stuff, a book called The Black Superman. I mean, we just have Chancellor Williams. There's so many of us, Francis Crest Wellesley. We need to, as I said at the outset, we need to put ourselves in the path of learning about this stuff by, again, listening to shows like this, Googling and researching type of authors I mentioned. And the third and final thing I'll say is pretty much me repeating what I said before. When I first began my activism in college, I thought that all black people were going to join. All black people were going to fight the good fight. All black people thought like Dr. King and thought like Malcolm X. For the most part, they're not. Sadly, we're divided by a number of things, religion and class and education and all that. So I become more of a pragmatist, a realist. We can't cross the victory line together, all of us black folks, but a large number of us. And that's why I said two or three times earlier, I'll say it for the last time now, you don't go to war with the army you want. You go to war with the army you have.
Indeed.
This is the army we have. We're going to fight this good fight thanks to you, thanks to Anthony, and thanks to other like-minded people.
Indeed. And before you go, Counselor, there's something that we must address, you know, because in order for us to make our community a whole community, in order for us to make us one, we must address the marginalization of black men. I want to ask you for one or two steps. Where should we start? Because we must address this. The marginalization of black men. What can we do, and where should we start?
Well, first we need to start by being proud black men. I know that, don't get me wrong now, I love the concept of intersectionality, that there's issues affecting women. That ought to be fought against. Issues affecting gays. That ought to be fought against. Issues affecting transgender. That ought to be fought against. Issues affecting the disabled, that ought to be fought against. There's all this oppression going on in society, but I mean it when I say the black man has to rise up. Because every time a society has advanced, it's because black men or white men or yellow men or red men have got together to either advance a cause or defend a cause. And that doesn't mean we put all the other groups to the side. I'm just saying that each group, if I were a woman, I'd say it's incumbent upon women to do stuff. If I were gay, I would say it's incumbent upon gay, but I'm a black man. You're a black man. Anthony's a black man. We have to look at this and say we have to take it upon ourselves to build up our community. And we'll accept and encourage support from other oppressed groups, but at the outset, black men have to, quote, do for self by advancing the cause of our community.
Indeed.
And allow other folks to join in. But we have to take the lead, as we've always done, and make sure we don't disrespect anybody else in the process.
Indeed.
I support intersectionality. We got to make sure that black men do the right thing.
Indeed.
Quick thing I'll say at the end. When you look at the oppressor, every time, every single time that the oppressor has come down on black people, he starts by coming down on black men. So we're the vanguard, even
indeed,
if we don't want to be.
Indeed. Attorney at law and adjunct professor, Mr. Michael Quard out of Philadelphia. Our special guest this morning, as we continue to celebrate Black History Month, as we continue to celebrate Reggae Month, ladies and gentlemen. Know where you're coming from. Spend this month, ladies and gentlemen, to know your history. Know our story. Thank you so much, Council, for being a part of our presentation this morning.
I really loved this, and to me, it was a great presentation, but even greater, it was a wonderful conversation among three black men. I loved it.
One love, my brother. Black power to the world, huh?
Yes, yes. Amen.
Indeed. Attorney at law and adjunct professor, Mr. Michael Court. Have a blessed day, sir. We'll talk soon.
You too.
One love.
I really enjoyed this.
Indeed. Thank you, sir. Anthony, before we go, we have to do our civic duty, and our civic duty is giving back. Giving back in a very meaningful way, as we always do. I have few events that we're going to mention, and their non-profit event coming up next week, Saturday, February 18th. It's all about the LJD Davis Foundation. They're celebrating 10 years of giving back in healthcare, giving back through the health services to Jamaica. Call Dr. Butner at 718-810-2553. The American Friends of Jamaica, they're getting ready for their Florida Gala, Anthony. It's going to take place on March the 11th, 2023. They're going to be honoring the Honorable Douglas Rain and the Honorable Shelley and Fraser Price. Call Caron Chung at 212-265-2550. The Meadowbrook High School Alumni Association New York Chapter, they're getting ready to celebrate their 28th anniversary dinner dance on the 15th of April, ladies and gentlemen. So please call Nadine at 847-372-9853 for more information. And the following day, Team Jamaica Bickle Labor of Love Luncheon is going to be taking place at the Chris Olla Country Club. For more information, it's 718-523-2861. Last but not least, the American Foundation for the University of the West Indies, they're getting ready for their 26th annual Legacy Gala. We're giving back to charity. Please call Miss Anne-Marie Grant at 212-759-9345. Anthony, any final words?
Yeah, man, I think this was an exceptional program, really. You know, shed some real good light, and, you know, it's great that we can bring persons like the professor to, you know, talk about our black history and how we move forward.
Indeed. Thank you, Anthony, for your contribution, as always, sir. We'll talk soon.
All right, you take care.
One love. Groovin' Radio was executively produced by Clement Hume and Christopher Roberts. Groovin' Radio was hosted by Ras Clem. Contributing to our presentation this Saturday morning, in our musical presentation, we remember the legendary Mr. Bob Andy, one of the most prolific songwriter and singer to come out of Jamaica. The brand new album, Remembering Bob Andy, is available at VP. In our community engagement segment, we celebrated with the St. Andrew Technical Alumni Association. Their president, Mr. Aurice Campbell, joined us this morning to talk about some of their achievements over the last 20 years. We got news courtesy of the Jamaica Gleaner, Jamaica Now with Mr. Jovan Johnson. Anthony Turner joined us for Entertainment Report. He is our writer. He provided the bio for our very special guest, Mr. Attorney at Law and Adjunct Professor, Mr. Michael Cord. Black History Month presentation right here. Waiting on the other side of the 11:30 hour, it is going to be the Wake Up Radio team. Good morning, Debo. I hope you're feeling well. Ira Jam comes in at 1 p.m. At 6 p.m., it's going to be Link Up Radio. And at 8 p.m., Soundchat Radio comes in with Chin and the family. Groovin' Radio will rejoin you tomorrow evening at 6 p.m. Once again, my name is Ras Clem, and this is the Groovin' Radio Experience.